There is a third set of data which, to my mind, is significantly more convincing about invasive pneumococcal disease, and this is the now four indirect cohort analyses that have been done of efficacy. Because pneumococcal disease comes in serotypes that are covered by the vaccine and serotypes that are not covered by the vaccine, there's this really cute arithmetical trick that you can do, developed by Claire Broom from the CDC, that allows you to measure the efficacy of pneumococcal vaccine without knowing at an individual level vaccination rates in the population. As long as you know vaccination rates in the people who have invasive pneumococcal disease, you can do it. It's just arithmetic, you can do the calculation. And in every single cohort that's been looked at, okay, they all have sort of different biases and different issues, but in all of the cohorts that have been looked at, you can see that the estimate of vaccine efficacy in eligible adults is something on the order of 50 to 60%. And this, to my mind, is the convincing data that there really is an effect of polysaccharide pneumococcal vaccine on invasive pneumococcal disease. And even at effects significantly lower than 50%, this is a vaccine that is cheap enough that is very clearly cost-effective in that setting. So there is one other set of data that applies to this, and this is data from, there are two active surveillance studies in Canada where you can look at what happened to adult rates of invasive pneumococcal disease before and after the polysaccharide program. So the top one is TIBDN, which is the surveillance system in Toronto. We have data from, by the grace of God, not because we were smart, from the 2 years before the introduction of the program, and then going through the program and before the introduction of PCV. And the CASPER surveillance system in Calgary captured the first year of the PPV program there, and then had a couple of years between the PPV program and the conjugate program to look at. And you can see in both those programs that it really does look like there's a very significant impact on the rate of invasive pneumococcal disease in at-risk adults over the age of 65. You don't see an effect. Here's the TIBDN data. You see a very small effect on people who are under the age of 65 with a vaccination rate of 10%. You're not likely to see much difference in disease rates in the population. But at a vaccination rate of 30% or 40%, you can see that there is, in fact, a very significant reduction in the rate of invasive pneumococcal disease in Toronto in association with the introduction of that program. So that first line, 1995-96, so the 2 years before the introduction of the polysaccharide program, from 1997 to 2001, the polysaccharide program is the only vaccination program and for at-risk adults. And then in June of 2001, we licensed the conjugate vaccine, and you then see that drop in adults that you expect as a consequence of herd immunity from vaccinating children. Now, if you believe these data, that polysaccharide vaccine prevents invasive pneumococcal disease, and while the data are not perfect, I would put it to you that they're considerably stronger than a number of other vaccination programs that we support and do much better at, there's still a number of big questions about polysaccharide vaccine. The first of them, and I think one of people's big blocking issues about believing the invasive pneumococcal disease data is, you know, if invasive pneumococcal disease is bacteremic pneumonia, how does it make sense that you can prevent invasive disease but you can't prevent pneumonia? If they're the same disease and one of them is just more severe than the others and it spills over and gives you a bacteremia, how could it possibly be true, okay, that there's a difference? Second question is, well, okay, so we give people a vaccine. How long does it last? What are we going to do about it? When do you have to revaccinate? And the third big issue is that this is a polysaccharide vaccine, and polysaccharide vaccines carry a risk of subsequent hyperresponsiveness that poses a risk. Well, there's two pieces of evidence now that help you a little bit with the invasive pneumococcal disease versus pneumonia issue. This is data from our indirect cohort analysis in TIBDN. We started about 6 years ago looking at lab-confirmed pneumococcal pneumonia. And so now this is an indirect cohort analysis of protective efficacy against lab-confirmed pneumococcal pneumonia. It is data that is somewhat fraught because the majority of pneumococcal pneumonia does not get lab-confirmed, and you are right to be worried about the biases involved. But what you do see here is that our estimate of effectiveness is significantly lower against lab-confirmed pneumococcal pneumonia than it is against invasive pneumococcal disease in overall adults. And we know both from our data and from the CASPER surveillance data that part of that effect is that the serotypes that cause pneumonia are not the same distribution as the serotypes that cause invasive pneumococcal disease. Some strains of pneumococcus are more invasive than others, and so they aren't, in fact, exactly the same disease. Second interesting question about that we're learning now that we know more about serologic protection against pneumococcal disease is that you need a higher level of protection to protect you from pneumonia than you do to protect you from bacteremia. Okay, so it then may not be surprising that you get protection, can measure protection against invasive pneumococcal disease in a setting in which you can't measure protection against pneumonia. And we'll come back to those serological levels in a moment. We still know very little about the duration of effectiveness. These are the only estimates that exist. Jay Butler's indirect cohort analysis and then Zhang Liu looking at our data, both of which suggest that you do get protective efficacy out to at least 5 years and maybe longer. But the confidence limits on those estimates are fairly wide, and it's really not satisfactory data. If you're interested in hyperresponsiveness, I would refer you to Kate O'Brien's review in The Lancet Infectious Disease in 2007, a really beautifully laid out analysis of what the issues are. Fundamentally, we know that polysaccharide antigens can induce tolerance. There's good evidence that meningococcal polysaccharide vaccines can be associated with tolerance. There's some evidence that that's true for pneumococcal polysaccharides. But the data is not as convincing in adults as it is in children. There is some evidence in both children and adults that hyporesponsiveness is time-limited, so it may exist for a year or two, but it doesn't exist for 5 or 10 years. And serotypes, remember, of course, that this is not actually one vaccine. It's 23 vaccines. And serotypes and immune responses to serotypes are different. So you probably can't talk about hyperresponsiveness as a global thing with all the polysaccharide vaccines. You've got to talk about it one-on-one, which makes it much more complicated and difficult to understand. So the bottom line about hyperresponsiveness is that it remains a theoretical issue, but we really don't know if it's clinically significant. Okay, so then in 2001, we got the conjugate vaccines, and obviously for pediatrics, conjugate vaccines have been absolutely amazing. And here's what the new ones look like. Prevnar, the 7-valent vaccine, 3 additional in Synflorix now from GlaxoSmithKline, and Prevnar 13 is likely to be licensed in the fall of this year with the addition of 3, 6A, and 19A. And here's the comparison to the polysaccharide vaccine. Just to make life really complicated, Prevnar 13 has one serotype, 6A, that is not in the polysaccharide vaccine, okay? And then there's a group of other antigens that are in the polysaccharide vaccine but not in PCV13, okay? Just to make your life as complicated as possible in trying to look at it. When conjugate vaccines were made, a number of people, certainly the vaccine manufacturers, thought that the conjugate vaccines were going to come in and they were going to take over the whole market and polysaccharide vaccine was going to go. But it turns out that conjugate vaccines were not originally brilliant for adults. And the issues with PCV7 for adults are threefold. The first is that although 87% of pediatric invasive pneumococcal disease was due to serotypes in PCV7, it's in the range of 60% for adult invasive pneumococcal vaccines. So you're not going to get the same benefit vaccinating adults as you do in kids. PCV7 obviously is also a lot more expensive than polysaccharide vaccine, so a vaccine that's clearly cost-effective is then up against a much more expensive vaccine, which is in most situations probably not cost-effective.